can't surrender to the rush of day. When the heat of a rolling wave can't be turned away, an enchanted moment. This is Beth at Galactic Roundtable. How are you doing tonight? Thank you for joining me. We're going to start out tonight with an extraterrestrial contact event. We're learning to make contact with extraterrestrials for world peace. And by doing this, we become an experiencer. We can expect to have an experience of etheric contact, telepathic contact, or even physical contact by doing these exercises. And I guarantee you, as you practice this every single week, you will make contact when you're ready. So let's begin tonight with a guided meditation. And prepare yourself where you are. Relax and become comfortable in your chair. And slow your breathing and join me now. And we'll make an invocation for contact with extraterrestrials above the spot where we're sitting now. Thank you for this.
Welcome. Tonight we're going to initiate a contact experience with our extraterrestrial friends. As we initiate an interactive experience with the extraterrestrials, we will first begin by doing an invocation to invite in the highest beings of light. Following that, I will do a guided meditation with you. During the guided meditation, you may also visualize the coherent thought sequencing to call extraterrestrials to where you are now. I invite you to close your eyes, make yourself in a comfortable place, and take long, slow, deep breaths. This initiative is dedicated to the cosmic and planetary hierarchy. This includes all the archangels and angels, the Alohi, and the elementals, the plasma forms of life, and all the Christed extraterrestrials, such as the Ashtar Command and the beloved Arcturians, the Pleiadians, the Sirians, only to name a few. Please continue to take slow, deep breaths, and in a very relaxed state, we begin with our invocation of the Lady Master, beginning with Divine Mother. We begin this meditation by calling forth the Divine Mother and all the Lady Masters of the planetary and cosmic hierarchy. We call to the Divine Mother and Lady Masters to supply a group of Merkaba in the shape of a gigantic lotus blossom, which will carry all in attendance like a giant ocean liner sailing through the heavens to take us up to the multidimensional reality and the throne of the Divine Mother. The Divine Mother I speak of here is the cosmic feminine being who, in truth, is the left hand of God, and is the fount of which all feminine goddesses and deities spring forth. She is also the fount from which the feminine aspect of all beings spring forth, including all of the gods, goddesses, ascended masters, initiates, disciples, and in actuality, every single manifested aspect of creation. So let us now, my brothers and sisters, feel ourselves being lifted up in the Divine Mother's Merkaba, embraced and carried forward. So let us now, family, my brothers and sisters, feel ourselves being lifted up in the Divine Mother's Merkaba, embraced and carried upward through all the dimensions of reality to the very throne of creation itself. As our lotus blossom Merkaba ascends now to the top of creation, to the level of divinity, we first experience at the very core heart of creation itself absolute stillness and absolute all-pervading love. we are enveloped in a translucent platinum pink light that is now absorbing itself into every cell, molecule, atom, and electron of our being and into our very soul and our source essence itself. We are also immersed in the most sublime fragrance of the sweetest smelling roses you could possibly imagine. In the background can be heard the music of the spheres in the form of a radiant choir of angels intoning the most magnificent melodies and harmonies you have ever heard. The light emanating from the throne of the Divine Mother is so bright and magnificent that it takes a few moments for the eyes and senses to adjust to such splendor. As our collective eyes focus upon the throne of the Divine Mother, her translucent, lighted form can now be seen with her arms open in embrace, gathering all into the center of her very heart. It is as if the Merkaba, with all of us gathered within it, has entered and become one with the living, pulsating heart of the Divine Mother. As we remain in this stillness, we can feel our entire beings and our own individual hearts now rhythmically beating to her cosmic pulse. My brothers and sisters, know that Divine Mother and Divine Father are but two halves of the same whole that together comprise that which we call the Godhead. Feel the exquisite love, joy, warmth, tenderness, and nurturing as we are now merged with the Divine Mother. Feel yourself transforming into both an anchor for and a transmitter of this divine and hallowed love. Now the safety and the nurturing that exists within this most sacred gift as Divine Mother continues to infuse you with the reawakening. Know the safety and the nurturing that exists within this most sacred gift as Divine Mother continues to infuse you with the reawakening of that part of yourself that is the core of the goddess within you, both in female and male alike. Now see within this translucent, hollowed, platinum pink aura, Blessed Virgin Mary, as she glides to you upon a golden crescent moon. Feel the absolute purity of her essence and the wondrous benediction of her all-embracing love. As she merges into this heart space we now find ourselves in, she holds within her hand a rose, pink in color, representative of love's tenderness, and individually hands one to each of you at this moment. She watches as you each place the rose within your own heart, thereby claiming the essence of the feminine spirit and of unconditional love for and within your very selves. Take a moment to feel the love flood through your own being and then outward to touch all of life. Now see Kuan Yin as she emerges out of the light. Feel her gaze penetrate you at every single level of your being and flood you with the essence of divine mercy and compassion. Take a moment to let this purest quality of compassion, mercy, and forgiveness wash away any judgments or negativity that you have had toward yourself. Then, let it spread outward to others in your personal life that are suffering due to lack of mercy, forgiveness, and compassion, and let this same quality of compassion and mercy now flow outward to the entire planet as you join with Kuan Yin and her holy service, spreading divine compassion, mercy, and forgiveness. See now, as Pallas Athena emerges from the light, feel her qualities of divine love and divine strength enter into your being, recharging and reactivating these two aspects of the divine feminine as they co-mingle within her loving yet powerful essence. Take this in and know that which is the most loving, tender, gentle, compassionate, and nurturing feminine spirit likewise holds within its aura power, strength, and command. The feminine contains its own unique brand of power and strength, yet these divine qualities are likewise part of that which is the all-embracing Divine Mother. Pallas Athena brings you the harmony of these energies in female form. Allow yourself to honor the Divine Feminine this moment by both honoring beloved Pallas Athena and honoring your own feminine power, strength, and command. Watch now as a golden glow alights your inner vision to unveil the face of Vesta, the feminine aspect of the solar logos. Let this golden glow stimulate the pure gold of your own true being as it pours forth and radiates out of Vesta herself. Allow yourself to connect with solar intent in a way that you have never done on a conscious level before. Feel the utter joy of knowing just how much a part of Vesta and this solar system of love and wisdom you truly are. Let this feeling now radiate outward into the cosmos. Now see Lakshmi emerge upon her lotus blossom as she awakens within you the full knowingness that the abundance of all things is there for each and every one of you. She asks you now to think upon that which for you is abundance and prosperity. Then hear her as she transmits to you the power to manifest your personal prosperity and abundance. She wants you to know that you each have the power to do this by simply holding to the positive ideal of that which you seek, letting nothing whatsoever sway you from this focused intent. Allow yourself a moment to do this. Now think of a situation or place within the sphere of the planet that is in need of prosperity and abundance, and hold your positive and focused attention there for a moment. See now the Divine Mother of the Native Americans, who herself stands forth as representative of the soil, the grasslands, the rivers, oceans, mountains, trees, plants, animals, and rocks. Allow all nurturing of earth to flow through her into yourselves. Feel yourselves anchor her divine grace into the very core and heart of the center of our blessed planet. Feel now the pervading presence of Isis. She breathes into each of you the breath of antiquity that you may awaken to the new and ancient glory of your own goddess energies. She emits from her aura the ability to decode the language of light, wherein the mysteries of your past, present, and future stand forth to be revealed. Now behold Hera, Greek goddess of wisdom. She waves her wand upon you that you may have the wisdom to use the ever-awakening truths and mysteries for the benefit of all humanity. See now each of the seven feminine archangels, as one by one they come to bless you with the distinct quality of their ray. First comes Faith, then Christine, Charity, Hope, Mother Mary, Aurora, and Amethyst. Pause and receive their specialized blessings. now emerging are the feminine Alohi, Amazonia, Lumina, Amora, Astrea, Virginia, Aloha, and Victoria. Feel the enormity of their divine grace and blessings. Allow these most powerful co-creators within your field, and again, drink deeply of the feminine strength and will to create. See and feel the goddess of liberty, the lady of light, the lady Nada, Parvati, Kali, Durga, Mary Magdalene, Portia, Mother Teresa, the Earth Mother, the Lady of the Lake, Lady Helena, and the presence of all the Lady Masters who have ever graced and touched this planet. See the gopis of Krishna dance before you. Allow yourself to become one of them and dance along with them as you yourself embrace the feminine aspect of self. At this moment, it does not matter if you are male or female embodiment, for that which is of the goddess lives within all of you and seeks to dance the great dance of love divine to the melodies of the flute of Krishna. Once again, be aware of the breath flowing in and out of your heart center. Be aware also that there is a heart center located in a hidden chamber within the crown chakra. This is known as the heart within the head and is one of the major access points where love and wisdom blend. The other major access point for the blending of these two energies is within the eye that is hidden in a secret chamber within the heart center. This point is known as the mind within the heart. Allow the breath now to flow evenly through your bodies, while at the same time hold a point of focus in the heart within the head and the mind within the heart. Feel simultaneously as the solar plexus embraces the power of the feminine spirit. Know that this power is different from that which is contained within the masculine part of self, and is different also from the power or will that is representative of the divine father, divine masculine, or yang energies. Each aspect, both feminine and masculine, has a point of balance within each other. So, divine mother and divine father are complete within their own point of balance, and are more fully complete when they merge their balance essences within each other. Again, it is the place where these two energies fully merge that we call the Godhead. Now take a moment and give thanks to Divine Mother herself. Give thanks also to the essence of the goddess energy as she manifests within yourself, upon the earth, and in all planes of existence. Likewise, give thanks to the many Lady Masters, Lady Archangels, and Lady Alohi, who have given forth their unique blessings. Take a moment to give thanks to beloved Gaia, the Earth Mother. Now, give thanks to the feminine spirit within each of your brothers and sisters. Finally, give thanks to the feminine spirit within yourselves. Again, this applies equally to men and women alike. We continue on in our Lotus Merkaba together as we join the Ashtar command. Now, as we continue on with our meditation, we call forth the other masters to join us here. We call forth all the masters from the planetary and cosmic hierarchy to help as we call in the ships and ask for extraterrestrial contact. We call forth a planetary and cosmic axitonal alignment. We call forth Melchizedek, the Mahatma, and Metatron to now anchor the platinum net, clear away any and all unwanted energies. We begin by calling forth Lord Buddha, our planetary logos, and requesting the permanent anchoring and activation of all God crystals and seed packets from Shambhala. We now move up one level to the solar level and call forth Helios and Vesta, to now anchor and activate all the God crystals and seed packets from the solar core. We now move to the galactic level and call forth Melkor to anchor and activate all the God crystals and seed packets from the galactic core. We now move up to the universal level and call forth Melchizedek to anchor and activate all the God crystals and seed packets from the universal core. We move up again to the multi-universal level and call forth the multi-universal level, the multi-universal logos, to anchor and activate all the God crystals and seed packets from the multi-universal core. We now move to the Godhead and call forth directly to God and the Cosmic Council of 12 and 24 elders that surround the throne of grace for the anchoring and activation of all the God crystals and seed packets from the heart of God as we continue to soak in and absorb the God crystals, seed packets, and cosmic energies from Source. The Mahatma has asked me to make a very special request to all of you that are gathered here physically and upon the inner plane to take on a very specific and important spiritual assignment. The assignment he has requested us all to take on as a group body is that of being a planetary anchor and focus for his cosmic energies. So in this moment, I'm asking all of you, if you are willing to take on this spiritual assignment upon his request, if so, inwardly give your consent and approval to the Mahatma within the core of your being. For those who have now agreed, we will take 30 seconds of silence while he runs his cosmic energy, embodying all levels of God through us. We now also call forth from the Mahatma for the opening of all the levels of the heart in the sense of a holographic penetration of the Mahatma's entire being. We call forth from Melchizedek, Metatron, the Mahatma, the Archangels, and the Alohi Councils for the anchoring and activation of all fire letters, key codes, and sacred geometries to anchor and activate the master divine blueprint for each person present. We now call forth to our inner plane spiritual hosts for the anchoring and activation of the light grid of ascension for all of us going back to Source. We call forth the beloved Master Khatumi, the co-hand of the second ray, who will now confer the status of world teacher to all who are in attendance at this time. If you choose to receive this blessing, visualize yourself standing before Master Khatumi with your palms held open and turned upward, and see Master Khatumi first touching your heart and then your third eye and then your crown chakra. Feel the spiritual current run through you as you take on this mantle of responsibility. We now call forth the Divine Mother, Kuan Yin, Vesta, Lakshmi, Lady of the Sun, Lady Liberty, Portia, Lady Nada, Pallas Athena, Lady of the Light, Lady Helena, Hilda, Alice, Isis, the Virgin Mary, and all the Lady Masters of planetary and cosmic hierarchy. We call forth from this great sisterhood of light for the full anchoring and activation of the divine feminine within in order that it resonates in perfect harmony to the divine masculine within. Let us now return to our group Merkaba and receive further blessings and gifts from the masters. I call forth Archangel Michael. He steps forward in a radiant aura of light, wielding his blue flame sword of protection. He asks you, all of you here, to know that he has surrounded you and continues to surround you along with his legions of light, to serve as your personal and collective divine protector. He also knows that it is time for each of us to share with him the mantle of divine protection. I now call forth Vaiwamas, the higher aspect of Sanat Kumara, who greets you and brings forth a most wonderful gift. In celebration of the efforts of growth and initiation itself, he offers each one of us here a further unfolding of the inner senses. Let us sit in silence for a moment to receive this blessing from Vaiwamas. I now call forth the Lord of Sirius, who steps forth from the home of the Great White Lodge of Sirius, which Shambhala is an outpost of. The Lord of Sirius holds out his hands to each person in attendance and offers the gift of a golden key. This key holds the matrix, which will unlock the inner sanctums and secret chambers residing within Shambhala that very few in history of the earth have had access to. This key will unlock the secrets of the universe for the purposes of accelerated ascension and planetary world service. This key is now given to you in great sanctity and reverence. I call forth the Lord of Arcturus, who now steps forward from the Great Mothership. The Lord of Arcturus is known for helping to bring forward to humanity the spiritual attributes of love, unity, and harmony that we are all familiar with. Today, however, he brings forward a gift that is absolutely astounding in its effect. The Lord of Arcturus offers now the gift of his Arcturian joy machine. Feel the pure joy welling up within you. The element of joy rises on the wings of delight and laughter and carries one effortlessly to the heights of divinity. It is one of the more vital elements all too often missing in our lives. So let's take a minute to bathe in this joy. The Lord of Arcturus invites you all to inwardly call upon his machine at any time that you are in need of joy and want more lightness, fun, and laughter in your lives. The Lord of Arcturus is now turning it up full force. I now call forth Lakshmi, the goddess of prosperity. Lakshmi steps forward for all in attendance to make a cellular adjustment within each person to adjust their resonation and frequency on a conscious, subconscious, and superconscious level to attract and magnetize prosperity and abundance in all aspects of our lives, including extraterrestrial contact. Lakshmi, with outstretched hands, now places within each person's heart a golden lotus blossom of prosperity. Let us become receptive and allow this attunement and adjustment to take place on every level. I now call forth the planetary Christ, Lord Maitreya. He steps forward in robes of white and welcomes you all into your own self-mastery. Lord Maitreya's gift is to offer a benediction to all assembled here. I let him speak through me now with the following words. I, Lord Maitreya, grace you with the abundant confidence in yourselves necessary to go forward into the multitudes and teach of the oneness, love, and light that radiates within your soul and spirit. I join myself with you at this time in a closer unity than we have ever known before, and our paths as teachers, leaders, and world servers blends and merge at the very core and heart of your being. Know, all of you here, as you go forth from this moment forward, you walk in my sandals and I in yours. In gratitude for the planetary service work you have done and continue to do, especially with extraterrestrial contact, I grace each of you with the knowledge that you never walk alone. For I, Maitreya, share your footsteps. So let it be written, so let it be done. I now call forth Commander Ashtar and the Ashtar Command. Commander Ashtar brings forth the gift of spiritual discernment. This quality of energy is now being beamed into the third eye of each person in attendance from Commander Ashtar's mothership, the New Jerusalem. This activation will make his job easier as a guardian and protector of this planet, along with his fleet, as each one of us integrates and uses this heightened sense of discernment and takes personal responsibility to close off from any energies that do not stem from love, unity, and light. I now call forth Dr. Lorfan, who many of you don't know and who it is my great honor to introduce you to. Dr. Lorfan is the director of the Healing Academy in the Great White Lodge on Sirius. He is the interplane master physician who trains all teams and divisions of healers. Dr. Lorfan steps forward with his galactic healing team to offer all in attendance his personal assistance 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for all physical, etheric, and electrical health lessons. Dr. Lorfan and his team of galactic healers are the most advanced healers of the entire galaxy, and they wait only for your call to be of immediate service in this capacity. Let us all now take a minute to inwardly ask specifically for help with any health lessons we are dealing with, or if you prefer, for helping someone you know. Let us experience these healing forces now. Now we return to our Lotus Merkaba as we join together in an exercise. From where you are, you may lay flat or sit in a chair or sit on the floor. Imagine that your heart is a great lotus blossom. Take in a deep breath. Relax all the cells in your body. Imagine this great lotus inside your heart opening one petal at a time. Continue to imagine the thousand petals of this lotus opening one by one. Take in another deep breath. Now imagine that the love that you have for the benevolent extraterrestrials that we desire making contact with are just above you. And allow your love to flow out from your heart, from your lotus blossom, up and out, through the roof, out to the sky, and beam your light and your love to the extraterrestrials in your area. And give them a chance to make contact with you, either telepathically, maybe electronically, through a feeling. You may have senses, they're there, or even physically. They may fly past your window, or they may fly in the sky above your head. Take a moment to connect with this experience, man. Let us now bring this process to a close, and as we do so, the Divine Mother and Lady Masters gently and lovingly lift our Merkaba out of the heart of Divine Mother and gently and caressingly glide us down through all the multidimensional layers of divinity back to earth and into our physical bodies. As we do so, feel the Earth Mother embrace us in gratitude and joy. The Divine Mother wishes you all to know that a part of you still remains in her. The Divine Mother wishes you all to know that a part of you still remains in her heart from this experience, and she lovingly invites you all to return in total consciousness anytime you should feel the need or desire. She welcomes all of her prodigal daughters and sons home in support of their service missions contacting extraterrestrials. She wants you to know that, in truth, anywhere you are, there she is also. There is no place in heaven or earth where you are out of Divine Mother's embrace. Feel this, experience this, and know this at the very core of your being. Namaste.
Okay, everybody. Thank you for that. If you had an etheric experience during that time, please email me and tell me about it. My email is eltrutwin@gmail.com. eltrutwin@gmail.com. You can email me anytime with questions. For now, what I'd like to do is share a panel discussion that happened last August in Toronto. And it's just been made publicly available. You're going to hear Daniel Sheehan, Grant Cameron, Stephen Bassett, and Victor Vigiani on topics you've never heard them speak about before. It's extremely interesting. Please enjoy this. This is from August in Toronto at the UFO Contact ET Intelligence and Consciousness Retreat.
...that we have is this massive amount of output from Hollywood of having these terrible extraterrestrials that are coming to eat us, you know, and ranging all the way from the famous Twilight Zone episode of, you know, Serving Man, that big famous one. Turns out that it was a menu for them, you know, all the way to these latest, so-called blockbusters, where they have these transformers coming down and attacking the world that were built by somebody. So the question arises: is how do we address the two things? I'll add a little bit to your question: how do we address that phenomenon of people in Hollywood and other people trying to commercialize this entire thing by playing upon the dialectic and frightening people in generating this kind of real bad attitude toward these people, almost like a racist attitude toward extraterrestrials as such, and trying to gin up that kind of dialectic. And secondly, and perhaps more importantly in the long range, how do we deal with some of those aspects of the ET contact experience that are a bit frightening, and that do seem to be a kind of antithetical to certain levels of values that we have. And that I think that what we need to do is that rather than engage the dialecticians in a dialectic, which does nothing but feed into their energy field, is what we need to do is we need to present positive, constructive, alternative visions of the whole extraterrestrial future communications. That's what we need to do. And they don't have to be quite so Pollyanna-ish as some of them have been. Like George Adamski got a little carried away with how wonderful and fuzzy all these Venusians were and all that. I think we need to develop a realistic line, a diplomatic line of communication with the extraterrestrials, to be realistic about it. I think Marshall's people from out of Boulder cosmic allies or something. And he's talking in terms of saying, look, let's assume, for operational purposes, that these beings, even with advanced years in technology, may be largely similar to us, more similar than we think. So the bottom line is that I think that if we approach the extraterrestrial beings with an understanding that there are probably, as state the obvious, more than one of them, more than one particular group of them, and understand there may be a bit of a spectrum of their beliefs that may be analogous to the one we're dealing with here. That's why I think if we learn to deal with the different worldviews among our own people and do so in a positive and constructive manner without demonizing each other and getting into the habit of mind of dealing with it in that manner, it's going to make it much easier for us to deal with the extraterrestrial people and the potential spread of views that their people may have. So that's the bottom line. If we take care of our own home species and learn to be compassionate and loving and accepting of our own shortcomings and adequately respectful of our strengths, then we have a better chance of doing so with regard to the extraterrestrials. Okay?
But in the work that I do, especially in the libraries, meeting all the people that I've met over the past, I'd say, 6.5 years, as I, you know, described to you yesterday, they're basically neophytes in this. They come to the libraries really not knowing what a quote-unquote UFO is called, a UFO presentation. I don't call it that. The librarians do. And you get people, you get 35 or 40 people in a room like this with no starting point. There's a place where I have to bring it to them, bring the information. And the only way to start is the awesome, which I feel, credible sighting reports that we have. And I have two or three videos that I show because I've had them vetted. I know what they're all about. I know they're substantial. And I know, oh my goodness, what is that? And people get inspired by it. And I know it's kind of crass, and it's not a good word, but you got to start somewhere to capture people's imagination. If you show them a document, it doesn't work.
So everybody, this is Victor Vigiani speaking from Zealand Communications in Toronto. Look up his website. He's brilliant.
Work. If you show them a nice, you know, a testimony by somebody at a hearing, or it's you got to teach people to add and subtract before they can go into trigonometry or anything like that. That's the way, as an educator, that's the way I operate. And I think it's from ground floor, you got to do it. And then you move into some of the things that Danny is saying, and the transition becomes that much more simple because they're energized about what's really going on in the skies.
Just a couple of comments, because you hit points that I've spent a lot of time on in the last little while. You talked about the channeling thing, and the stuff I've done for the last year, and I put this manuscript together, and it has all the different ways of contact. And I look at it the same way as you would have if you started where I started, where you've got a town where half the people have seen it. So you go and you say, well, these people can't be lying. You ask all the people.
And then I'm sure you recognize the voice of Grant Cameron.
What you see, and you sort of put it together. The same as when it comes to the contact, I look at, as I said in my lecture, I have the people who do it through meditation. I have the people who say they've been abducted. Then they say, well, you can't talk to the channelers. And I look at the channelers and I say, well, there's thousands of channelers. Can the channelers all be lying? Well, no, the channelers aren't. So I look at all of the different ones, and I believe you can learn something from everybody. When it comes to the lights in the sky, I have my own experience in that when I had all the sightings, and then when the manuscript publisher who should have published it said, Mr. Cameron, you believe in this kind of stuff, count me among the unbelievers, I said, well, this sighting stuff is a total waste of time, but it's really not in a sense, it may not give you very many answers, but a lot of people have sort of a lack of faith. They want to see more. It's like they know, but they're not 100% sure, so they'd like to see something else. And I know we talked about this numerous times about going out, and I said, well, you know, I'm really not, I saw stuff real close. That's how I got involved. And I was really close, and there was no doubt what I was looking at. And it's like, yeah, I've seen enough UFOs. I don't really need to see any more UFOs. I want someone to talk in my head. And then the contactees, the people who have actually had the people talking in their head say, no, you don't want that. And I said, yeah, I do want that. And I said, you know, I've had the download and I've had the sightings. I want someone to talk in my head. No, you don't want that. And I said, just one time. I want someone to talk in my head, just one time. So I haven't had that. And it's the same thing as sightings. That's where I lack the faith. I would love to have somebody talk, an alien talk in my head, or God, or somebody talk in my head one time. And the other thing that you made a comment on is this fear aspect. And in my lecture, I said it's the analogy of the tree. It's the analogy of oneness. I do not believe there's evil Muslims running around. I don't believe there's evil Mexicans trying to climb over the border to steal American jobs. As soon as someone says evil, that part of the tree is evil, and that we got to cut that part of the tree off, then I really, that's when I start to say the message is probably coming from someone trying to sell something or trying to push something. I really, that evil concept, and I bought into it for years, but right now, when it comes to evil, I just like turn the other way. There's something wrong here, and it can't be a true message.
And everybody here gathered this weekend, I've been back and forth, and it's just been a pleasure to finally meet a lot of the people that inspired me to do the work that I do, and I appreciate that, all of you here and all of you here. This question is about consciousness and politics. There's no doubt in my heart and in my mind that our consciousness as a human species is raising. As that happens, I see an interface between the paradigms that currently exist with the current political structures of the world. Where does everybody on the panel see this interface playing itself out as we move forward? There was a lot of talk here that an idea said 80 years ago comes to fruition down the road. And it's people that have passion, that have the determination to see that through to its end. And I feel that everybody in this room has that passion and has that determination. So as we move forward, there was a lot of talk, Danny, you were talking about the political aspects. I see a higher consciousness in a world paradigm where there is no leader. Now, how do you all see the next evolution of political science and politics if we were to achieve our higher consciousness?
It's a really complex question, and I see them as two rivers, the political kind of thrust to things, and also this newly found, or it's always been there, that we've just discovered, idea that consciousness has a lot to do with how we're going to be interacting, with the news of this kind of contact, which is going to be the first stage, just the news of it, irrespective of contact itself. The news of it comes forward that it's credible, and once everyone realizes that, is going to be a very big step. And I think that's going to be the important part. Now, who brings the news forward? People in this room. And the one thing that I think is going to be really important is what major institutions will jump on board in order to move that, both either in the political or the conscious. I think that's where the confluence is. And I see the Catholic Church as being probably the most pivotal large organization that's going to begin to kind of separate the cracks and jump into the middle of the notes, as Danny's talking about, and give us a dissonant sound. That may not be their intention right now as an institution, but I think they're nipping at that bud to help us move between the opposites and throw us a dissonant sound that they have accepted the fact, a credible institution with all of its problems, you know, and as institutions have, that they have discovered something and they want to find a way to get people to know about it. And the contacts that I have had with the Diocese of Toronto and with people in the Eastern Rite Church, and also with the Vatican, my brother is closely associated with the Vatican as a representative for the Christian Brothers in Rome. And he and I have had many, many conversations about this. And I ask him, Dominic, when you go there, do you sense that there's a mindset of openness about this? He plugged right into it. I'm not sure exactly how he did it. I guess maybe because of my encouragement. But he has sensed in his meetings with the Christian Brothers and people in Rome that there is an openness to this. There is something there that can be used to allow this institution to bring this forward information as a bubble would rise to the surface slowly. And I think the church could be a very, very pivotal organization in releasing this news.
But my opinion is that if the institute comes into existence and is effective in doing what we're talking about doing, that what it's going to do is it's going to encourage actually the formation of alternative political parties in the United States. One of the major challenges that we have is the fact that there is this completely false dialectic between the Republican and Democratic Party, that there is this kind of underlying unity in their positions, with regard to the support for transnational corporate capitalism and international banking, the suppression of the environment, et cetera. They're in common on that, and they differ in a certain number of social arguments that they engage in for the sake of appearances. And I think that they're, that for example, when Ross Perot ran back in 1992 and ended up taking 19% of the vote, primarily away from George H.W. Bush, and stopped him from being reelected for a second term. George H.W. Bush was well on the way planning this kind of new world order that he set forth in the second draft of the 1992 United States Defense Department Policy Planning Guidance Document, and that that got derailed by Perot running and stopping him from winning. But that Reform Party ended up being potentially taken over by Patrick Buchanan and the kind of right-wing neoconservatives to actually have their own potential political party. And that was viewed by the Republican Party as being dangerous because it was drawing off the reactionaries from the Republican Party that are a base of their support. And so that they undertook to stop that process from taking place. But you still see that kind of resurgent kind of Tea Party kind of effort going on that have taken control of the right wing of the Republican Party now. And so the Republican Party that used to be sort of a conservative political party with kind of a moderate wing on their left and a kind of a reactionary wing on their right has now been basically taken over by the reactionaries. And so the healthy process would be is to have the Republican Party gird its collective loins and basically push those people out and have them become a reactionary political party and have the Republicans call themselves the conservative party, you know, and allow those people to be the reactionaries. And in the Democratic Party, now, as long as you only have two parties functioning, the farther to the right that the Republican Party goes or those that dominate the Republican Party, the farther to the right the Democrats slide, because they say, what's the advantage in us being way off to the left? All we have to do is get cuddled right up to the left flank of the Republican Party and take all of these positions. And that's why you get this new, more moderate Democratic Party that Richard Gebhardt started with the Democratic Leadership Council. And now Hillary Clinton has become the chairperson, or was the chairperson, of the public policy division of the Democratic Leadership Council. And that leaves the, you know, there are 68 members of the Progressive Caucus now in the House of Representatives. All of them, by the way, not coincidentally, come from university towns where people read and actually have, you know, open discourse and things. And so that there should, in fact, be a progressive party as well. You know, so they don't have to keep on, you know, compromising with the kind of Dixiecrats that used to be in the Democratic Party, et cetera. So that in my opinion, if we got more and more healthy in the country, we would have a spectrum of political parties. We would have 7 operational political parties, and the political party of which we would become a part, ideally, might be the 8th paradigm political party. The one that focuses on the issue of extraterrestrial existence and trying to develop an extraterrestrial worldview and protocols for contact and what kind of public programs ought to be put in place to prepare for this, et cetera. What kind of educational programs ought to be inserted into the school to start preparing people for this, et cetera. So I see that as being a healthy direction in which the country would go. And the reason why it's resisted so mightily by the Republican Democratic Party is because it would be less stable. The coalitions that would be formed among those 8 political parties would be unstable. And so therefore they wouldn't be able to mount long-term wars, you know, that were completely unsupported by the vast majority of the population in the country. And the reason they can do that now is because the two parties don't give anybody any choice. So once the Republican Party, led by George W. Bush, decides they want to invade the Middle East on some some hypothetical existence of these weapons of mass destruction, they need to get John Kerry to sign on board with them in the Democratic Party. They need to get Hillary Clinton to okay that operation, and that's what they did. And so that once the two parties endorsed doing this, there wasn't anybody left to criticize it. And so that's a very serious problem with having this artificial dialectic between the two parties that isn't really real. So I think that's the direction in which we should try to move our people for all the reasons that we talked about, Chris, of trying to just clarify their thinking of, you know, which of these parties most clearly reflects what it is that they believe. And then we can sit down and have a debate and a dialogue about this, and people can elect representatives from their congressional district that are reflective of the dominant worldview that's in their community. And then they can come together in the Congress and try to work out coalitions, coalition governments. And they're like the governments in European countries that are both at one and the same time less stable, but also have much more social programs. They have much larger influence on social democratic policies, et cetera. There should be a social democratic party in the United States. You know, I mean, it's bizarre that there isn't, unless you understand the lengths to which the Republican Democratic Party will go to stop it. So I think that's the direction in which we should move. And I think if we're successful in getting people to utilize this device that is actually was kind of kept secret among the people in the graduate schools at Harvard University about how the world really works. You know, if we can share with people how the world really works and have people participate in the world the way it really works, we can have democracy be real. And as Steve and I were talking about, is that, you know, that the experiment in popular democracy is still very, very new. I mean, you know, we're dealing with like a 230-year experiment going on here in all the history of the human family. And it really behooves us to try to make that thing work and know what has to get done to make it work. But people are going to confront you and say, well, we can't possibly have a third party. Look what happened with Ralph Nader. You know, that he caused, you know, George W. Bush to be able to get reelected because he took these votes away from the Democrats. You know, that it's ridiculous. You know, that we need to have political parties that reflect clear worldviews and can put forth their arguments and argue why they believe in the four pillar beliefs and put forth the best arguments they have. So we have meaningful debates when they gather together, the candidates gather together, and we can have proportional voting. We can have all kinds of things that can improve the democratic process. We need to try to step forward to help salvage the democratic experiment. You know, it's on very tough times right now when, you know, the options that we're going to get are, you know, and it's unfortunate because Hillary Clinton, because of the existence of this two-party system, has felt compelled to move all the way from what her natural instincts are, and Bill's as well, into being basic Republicans, you know, in order to, what they think, in order to get elected inside the system as it presently is. We need to modify that system. Allow people to speak more freely and clearly about what it is they believe. And that way it'll open up for us this eighth paradigm discourse where we can articulate very clearly what we think the worldviews are and what ought to be done.
I'll approach your question from this angle. I don't think Hillary Clinton will be president of the United States. There are two principal reasons. Most important one is the support for the Iraq War, which ultimately has led to ISIS and the next level of terrorism. And she's going to own it. I think there'll be a third party in 2006.
Now, everybody, you recognize Stephen Bassett's voice here.
Team and whoever's in that party are going to beat her up pretty badly over Iraq, period. And that may be more than enough. You know, war is not something that women take kindly to. So even if you're a woman candidate, you don't want to be wrong on war. Secondly, the second reason that may sink her candidacy is that Bill Clinton, not because he wanted to, entertain the efforts or entertain the desire of family friend Lawrence Rockefeller to consider the ET issue. And Rockefeller was a billionaire and a supporter of the DNC, a powerful person. He would have preferred probably he hadn't shown up in March of 1993, but he did. And so thus began the Rockefeller Initiative, which Grant is an expert on. And I went on for approximately 3 years. It involved White House personnel. We have 1,000 pages of documents confirming all of that. Grant Cameron got those documents through an FOIA submitted to the OSTP, which under a quirk at the time that he submitted it, in 2000 roughly, was exempt and not part of the Presidential Records Act, which is to say that those documents would have been locked up under the Presidential Records Act's protocols, but since they were exempt, they were accessible through FOIA, and somebody in the office actually released the documents, which will ultimately, I think, be the downfall of Hillary Clinton. So we had the documents. By the way, one of the very first things that George Bush did when he won the presidency after Clinton left was to put the OSTP under the Presidential Records Act, so that would never happen again. And so essentially, we have documents proving that she was involved, that she was looking at the drafts, that her staff was involved. And of course, Podesta was the chief aide to Clinton, so he knew all about it. We also know that Leon Panetta was the chief of staff, so he knew all about it. Al Gore was the vice president, and they were like, you know, this great team, the ultimate tight team. He knew all about it. Bill Richardson knew all about it. Webb Hubble knew all about it. So this thing goes on for 3 years. Now, the press sort of knew about it because it was covered in a light article in New York Daily News, but not in the Washington Post or even the Washington Times, but they knew, they sort of knew what's going on. They live in the White House. I've been there many times in the West Wing. They have their own facility there, you know. And over in the East Wing, you see Rockefeller and this whole business is going on for 3 years, but they didn't cover it. Truth embargo. Okay. Okay, well, that's actually a bad thing for Hillary. Because if they had covered it, it would have come out. And it would have been an issue. It might have advanced the disclosure process. It might not have. But it didn't come out. And so since 1996, really since 1993, Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, John Podesta even though he called for the release of UFO files, Bill Richardson, Leon Panetta, and John Podesta have never said a single word referring to the Rockefeller Initiative. In their world, it never happened at all, period. And that is, 93, we're talking 21 years. In other words, we considered an effort by Rockefeller to release all the UFO files, grant amnesty to witnesses. We did reports. A book was written, blah, 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 blah. But we are never going to talk about it. Now, he was president of the United States. She was the co-president of the United States. We're never going to talk about it because it would hurt our political aspirations. Well, guess what? The Rockefeller Initiative is all over the citizen hearing on disclosure. And 535 discs of that is heading to the Capitol Hill. And they are going to be looked at, and they are going to be reviewed. And the Rockefeller Initiative is going to have a new life for about the third time. Only this time, it's going to be the blue dress. And when Hillary is finally confronted on this, she's going to have to explain why she never said a word about this effort to release all the UFO files by Rockefeller after the Cold War ended, because he knew that was the time to get disclosure. And she's finished. So that's my answer to that question. And we'll see how that goes. The ET issue is real, and there's a price to be paid for denying it, avoiding it, lying about it. And those prices and those bills are about to come due.
Just a few words on this.
This is Grant Cameron's specialty area.
in terms of the Rockefeller Initiative and what Lori brought up about the internet, I'm pretty skeptical on politics. We have five parties in Canada. I think we're just as disillusioned with our politics as they are in the United States. And we have all spectrums from the left to the right. I think it comes down to we the people. And that's where the internet comes in, that we've always looked for the Messiah. We look for somebody in politics who's going to save us. And every 4 years, everybody gets hooked in, they get hooked in their mouth, and they fall for it. And everybody promises they're going to do this for you in unemployment, you're going to live forever. And everybody votes for them. And then you see the presidential numbers drop like a stone when everybody says, oh, he's not the Messiah, crucify him, get rid of the guy. You know, I knew he was the wrong guy. And we do the same thing over time. And what I would say comes down to like an HOA where you have smaller groups who run their own affairs, where people like Steve can actually force the President Clinton to go on TV by going on the internet and by pushing issues, because the internet is what's going to rule. It's not going to be newspapers. It's not going to be the government. We can force issues through the internet. We have as much say as newspapers now. We can put stuff out, and we just have to learn to mobilize ourselves.
Okay. So amazing to hear these guys talking about these topics that they never speak on. Very much enjoyed that. What I'd like to talk to you about next is I'm going to share a presentation from Grant Cameron that was from January of this year. And it's beginning his message on consciousness. He's moved away from his epic work with the UFO presidents, and he is moving on to consciousness. And we touched on his work a little bit last week, and I'd like to look into that more. There's a new angle on this, what I'm sharing. This is from the MUFON presentation in January 2014. While we're waiting for this to start, I will tell you that I'm getting ready to write, do a lot of new writings with new information. And I'm going to be making videotapes, and I want you to start to look for that. I'm going to put out a lot of new material now in preparation for the Congressional Hearings Initiative. Let's see if we can get this to work now. Here we go.
All right, Grant Cameron. Grant is the world's leading researcher on the subject of UFOs and U.S. presidencies. I bet you knew that. That's why you're here. He's visited numerous government archives, interviewed countless officials, and he's written a lot of articles. He was actually presented the Investigator of the Year Award at the February 2013 International UFO Congress. That's quite a thing. Investigator of the Year of all these people that are out there investigating. So, wow. And he also served on the panel of the Citizens Hearing Disclosure in April and May of 2013. So, Grant's been a very active man. Mr. Cameron lectures. Now, let me say this. Let me move on because we need to get going here. He's going to give a great presentation. You guys are going to like it. A veteran of UFO investigations from Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, Grant Cameron.
Thanks, Jim, and thanks, Stacy, for inviting me back. You know how I love Phoenix, and I'm here for the next month. I'm here for Congress, so we rented a house out near Alejandro. And we're here. It was the one day I was telling people, the one day in Winnipeg is 59.6 degrees below zero Fahrenheit. Talked to someone in Las Vegas and said, are the lights still on? I said, yeah, get used to it. It's sort of like, anyway. I'm glad to see lots of people here. This is a new lecture. It's very long. I probably won't get to do all of it. But I'd like to invite my brother. Thank Mark Olson. I have somebody actually here from my city who knows what the cold's all about. He's here. He says he's just doing business from here rather than cold Winnipeg. But I think he's probably here trying to buy the Phoenix Coyotes or do something. That's what he tells me. But I'm glad to see Mark here and lots of people I knew from last year. This is a new lecture. This is something that I asked Stacy I wanted to do. I felt I had to do it. Most people want the consciousness lecture, which is now turned into like a 3-hour-plus lecture. This one, I got an idea. I had to do this lecture. And it came so fast and so furious. I'm going to go through the first part. I'm going to maybe skip over some of the stuff. I want to get to the music stuff. The music stuff, when I'm a music idiot. I have no interest in music. I was a radio talk guy, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. When I saw this music stuff, I mean, I had a shiver go up my spine every single day when I saw this story start to unfold. So that's what I want to get to. So I'm going to go through the first part. The beginning here, the bottom line is very important. It's part of the whole lecture. This was told to a police officer, contactee in 1967. He was told, we want you to believe, but just a little. And that's a key to my lecture. This is a theory. This is my theory. But what it does is it sort of tries to explain my long history. I've been at this for almost 40 years. Sometimes I think I was in this before Jesus was a carpenter. It's just like it's been forever. And I know that the world is a different world, that we are going through phases. This is not a uniform phenomenon.
Hi, everybody. I think we were down for a few minutes. It was a technical glitch that happened with the Wi-Fi, and it was very strange. Anyways, I'm going to resume Grant Cameron. Enjoy this, everybody.
Then they, referring to us, the UFO guys, have to come up with a physical theory which explains everything. And that's the key thing, as we've been locked into, is to say that if you want to explain UFOs to the National Academy of Sciences, you have to have a physical theory to explain it, provided it's physical. If it's not physical, if the physical world is not the real world, then you really don't. But this is what we're locked into, and everybody's, this is why we have problems in ufology, is we're always waiting for science to bail us out. Science is not going to bail us out because they buy into this random worldview. And when you start talking going past the speed of light, where things aren't physical, even though the quantum world, starting in 1911 with the gold foil experiment, showed that most of the stuff is space, that the physical world is not really the physical world, people still buy into that concept that to go past the speed of light, to get there from here, you know, you can't do it. So that's why we're having trouble in the thing. This is what I call the sticks and stones world. It's the world of particles bouncing into each other, that nothing happens unless two particles bang into each other and cause a reaction. Then there's the second model, and this is the sort of the woo-woo world that a lot of us believe in, the sort of the idea of the holographic universe, that everything is entangled, that the physical world is secondary, the consciousness comes first, the physical is a byproduct of that. That it's an impression, that the physical world is a perception, it's not a real actual thing. That's the second. Here's Albert Einstein, a quote I got from Albert Einstein. Everyone who is seriously involved in the pursuit of science becomes convinced that a spirit is manifest in the laws of the universe, a spirit vastly superior to that of man, and one in the face of which we are modest powers must feel humble. So even though Einstein basically said that there is this other side to the universe, the scientific world basically still does not accept it. They go on their merry way. This is the unified, this is the crop circle, which shows that everything is entangled. This is basically the world, the second world view, that everything is entangled in the universe. So there's two different theories. This Big Bang theory, supported by science, has a physical basis, says everything is physical. If you're talking non-local, non-physical, it doesn't exist. Random parts, and that's the key part, that everything is random. It's all just a big, giant accident. Then you have the unified theory, and that's the oneness. The physical is just a perception. And then everything, even the physical world, is non-local. I'm just basically setting this up to get into the lecture, because you need some sort of background. I can't do the whole consciousness thing. Morphogenetic fields, I think, is very important. The whole idea, this is Rupert Sheldrake started this. The main experiment that's used to explain the morphogenetic field is a study that was done at Harvard University with the rats, where they take the rats, they teach them to run a maze, and then they go to the next generation, and every time they put a next generation of the rats through, the rats go faster through the maze. So, of course, the idea was that memory is genetic, that Rat learns from its parents, and the rats get faster and faster. And that was sort of the way it was until about, I don't know, it was 30 years or 40 years later, they decided to redo the experiment in Australia and Scotland. And they had the same type of rats, but they weren't related to the rats at Harvard University. And the rats went even faster. In fact, in Australia, one of the rats went through with no mistakes. The ones at Harvard started with 200 mistakes. And it went down to almost none. And that's when the idea started to arise, is that there is a morphogenetic field. There's a field that these rats are tapping into, and that they are learning from the rats at Harvard, that the more you do something, the more you go through something, that the faster it is, the faster the universe picks up, and the easier it is to learn. And there are other examples. This is one that I sort of like, is the monarch butterfly example. The monarch butterfly in 1 year will live four different lifespans. Three of them will live six weeks, and the other one will live like 6 or 7 months. So you have the idea that if it's genetic, all of them should be doing the same thing, and yet they're not. My theory all ties in to the work that was done by Dr. Michael Newton, who was an atheist psychologist who was doing regression work for treatment, and suddenly had somebody on his couch who suddenly started talking about being in World War I. And that led Newton to suddenly go to this whole idea of life between lives. He's the expert. He's done 7,000 people. He's now trained a bunch of students. They've done about 7,000 whatever people. So we're talking a lot of people. And basically, the idea that he says that before we're born, it's all basically planned out. That we plan our lives. We know who we're going to interact with. We know what things we have to work on. It's that basic reincarnation theory, except he's coming from an element where he's got a lot of data. Where they're reviewing the data and all the people say the same thing. So you got to sort of keep that in mind. Shakespeare had it almost 400 years ago. I remember I hated Shakespeare. I failed first year of university English, even though I had one of the highest marks in high school in English. And I failed it because I had to take Shakespeare. I hated Shakespeare. Now I'm quoting him. All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances. And one man in his time plays many roles, his act being seven ages. So this is the whole idea that a lot of it's just a play. We're going through a play. We know who we're interacting with. And that's the same idea that Newton had. And here's one I'm trying to impress. There's a new group, a new abduction group that's been formed. And I was asked to be on the board. And I said, no, I don't join groups. I like to stay independent. But one of the things I'm pressing for them to do is this key question. And the question is, when you are doing an abduction, I say the one question that should be asked of every single person is this an abduction? Question. At any point in the past, did you agree to be in this situation? According to Mary Rodwell from Australia, who's done 2,300 regressions, according to Dolores Cannon, who's done thousands of regressions, the answer will be 100% yes. Everybody will answer yes. I say, you take that answer, I agreed to this, and you run the question back. I don't care how you do it. Run the question and find out, well, when did you agree? It's a critical thing. Bud Hopkins and Jacobs will not ask the question. It's a key question that I say has to be part of abduction research. And what it'll basically tell you is that a lot of this goes back to before birth. Chris Bledsoe, a guy that I say should be invited here, he is an incredible case. This is a five-person abduction case in Fayetteville, North Carolina in 2007. When he was regressed by an associate of John Mack, his name was Dr. Michael O'Connor, he was regressed, and during that thing he was talking during the regression, he kept talking about a promise. And Dr. O'Connell says, what do you mean promise? Ask the aliens. What are you promising? What's the promise all about? And he said, they have been with me before I was born. It was all planned. They were been with me my whole life. This was all arranged before. So that's a key thing that fits into this theory that I have, is that a lot of this stuff goes back an awful long way. You can't just go back a couple of years. And so this, I say clearly, that if you ask this question, if it was part of an abduction study, and you asked the question and ran it back, you would have the answer to every single question in ufology. I think it would answer everything. And hopefully this new group will pick up on this. They've run it by the people, and they're trying to get the data. David Bowie, and we're going to get into music later on. David Bowie said, I've always felt like a vehicle for someone else, but I've never really sorted out what it was. There's a feeling that we are here for another purpose. And when you hear David Bowie's story, you'll be kind of see how that fits in. Steven Spielberg talked about dreaming. I'll sort of skip this. He talked about the fact that he gets it. And this comes down to this download that I'm going to start talking about now. The model that I sort of have adopted now is the Leo Sprinkle's model of how this works, that there are different levels. There's the physical universe, and then there's these levels going all the way up to the Godhead, whatever, is at the top of the pyramid, whatever it is. There's all these different levels, and that these are the shepherds. We are the sheep, and the aliens are higher than us. They're in one of these levels, but all they are is the sheepdogs. And when we get off the spiritual path, when we get into nuclear weapons or start to destroy the environment, then they're there to nip our heels and get us back on the path. That's the model that Leo Sprinkle uses, and it does seem to fit according to the theory that I've sort of developed. Mark Twain said this, it fits in. The two most important days of your life are the day you were born and the day you found out why. And that's critically important. And when you find out, then because most people will live, as they say, a life of quiet desperation. They'll go through, they'll pay the bills, they'll just put their kids in soccer, they'll do whatever. And someday a doctor comes up and says, you've got 3 months to live, and suddenly it's like, wow, now I got to figure out what's going on. Why am I here? What's going on? Where am I going to go? And they try to put it together. When it comes to downloads, it's not just alien downloads. This is a woman that's fascinating. She just died last year. She's a mathematical savant. Lived in India. This is the woman that took the 23rd root of a 201-digit number, and it took her 50 seconds to answer the question in her head. It took the computer 70 seconds, but there's a catch to that. The computer could not answer the question. First of all, they had to write a new software program for the computer to answer the question, and even then, the computer took 70 seconds. So this woman is not going 3 times 7 is 21, carry the 2. She's not doing that. There's something else going on here. The other one she did is she took 2 13-digit numbers, and this is the answer at the bottom. She did it in 28 seconds. And Diane Powell, who was on the John Mack board of directors, has worked a lot. I talked to her about this, working with savants, people who are able to sort of download. They're getting this stuff from somewhere. And she's doing research projects on this. PMH Atwater. There's another download. This is a woman who's one of the foremost authorities on near-death studies. She's written, I think, about 10 books. She's got 7,000 cases of near-death studies. And she talks about her download. Here's her talking about getting a download during her third out-of-body experience back in the 1970s.
And as I was doing that, I was able to witness how creation works, what creation is, and what consciousness is. And then a voice spoke, and I'm as used to guides and guardians and angels and all those kinds of voices. It wasn't that kind of voice. It was a voice so big, big. It, that voice filled the entire universe and all of creation. That's how big that voice was. And that voice said to me, and I quote, test revelation. You are to do the research, one book for each day. It did not name book one. It did name books 2 and 3. Future memory is book 2. It showed me what all this meant and what was to be in each book. It did not tell me how to do work or how long it would take.
So basically, we have a woman who basically was sort of downloaded 3 books. She's done more than 3, but she was basically given direction. She was getting a download. The Shining Lady, Chris Bledsoe, I'll sort of skip over this because I talk about him a little bit later. He has an encounter with Shining Lady, and Mark and I have met with a family. In fact, we met a couple of weeks ago with a family of doctors in Winnipeg who have the Shining Lady experience. So, they're getting downloads, and I'll talk about that a little bit later with one of the doctors. Let's skip that. Paul McCartney, this is a famous story, I don't know if you know. Paul McCartney, the song Yesterday, one of the biggest selling songs of all times, came in a dream. Woke up, song was in his head. He said there was a piano there, he raced to the piano, he wrote it down, he knew which chords it was, came in a dream. One of the biggest songs of all times. Here's him, this is his description. Burton Cummings from Winnipeg. This is the biggest band that ever came, maybe out of Canada. Came from our city, Burton Cummings. This is his famous song, American Woman. Was number one on the American charts for 3 weeks. This is a song, he talks about how this song came to him. He was off stage, behind the stage,
and he missed a cue. They started to play. The band started to jam. They're just making noise, and they're ready to start going. And he said to the guy, "I got to go on stage. I mean, they're playing." And he goes running on stage, and he starts singing "American Woman." And there's a kid in the audience. This is 1968. The kid's got a cassette tape recorder. And the kid's got this cassette tape recorder. This is when they first came out, before you had to have a big reel-to-reel, you had to haul it around. This kid has a cassette tape recorder, and they realized the kid was going to bootleg the show. So they grab the kid, and they take the tape off him. And after the show, they listen to the tape, and it has "American Woman." And they went, "You sang that? Where'd that come from?" They had no idea. They could not remember singing it. And they said if the kid had not had the tape recorder, this song, "American Woman," the biggest song ever to come out of Canada, would never have been played. It was what he called a conscious download. The idea for Google came in a dream. The idea for the sewing machine, for the needle for the sewing machine, came in a dream. The periodic table was first drawn by this chemist, Dmitri, whatever his name is. Came in a dream. He wrote the whole periodic table down. It came in a dream. Nobel Prizes. We should give Nobel Prizes back. The theory of relativity came in a dream. Won the Nobel Prize. Brain chemistry. The idea that chemistry is what moves around in the brain is sort of the center of between the synapses and all this sort of stuff. Came in a dream. The experimental idea to confirm this idea came in a dream. Won the Nobel Prize. Niels Bohr, the structure of the atomic structure using quantum theory, which he won the Nobel Prize for, came in a dream. Banting, the idea of insulin, won Nobel Prize, came in a dream. Watson, the spiral staircase in his dream, which gave him the concept for the spiral DNA, won the Nobel Prize, came in a dream. This one here, the benzene molecule and the nature of carbon, both came in dreams to this guy. He didn't win a Nobel Prize because he had died before they started awarding Nobel Prizes, but three of the first five Nobel Prizes were won by his students. Charles Lindbergh talks quite clearly about interaction when he flew across the ocean. This interaction with spirits who are guiding him and telling him what to do and giving him navigational directions. And this is 22 hours into the flight. He talks about this download, the fact that there's this interaction. It's not just a physical world. There's something else that's helping us and interacting with us. This is Charles Lindbergh's story. I'll sort of skip it. And he basically was very adamant about this whole story that has happened. This is the one that, this is the one that this NASA guy gave me. I can't expose her now, but perhaps the top brain researcher in the United States is a contactee or an experiencer and claims that a lot of the material she is getting is from somebody else. This is the one that Mark and I met with. Mark actually helped on this thing. Was trying to aid this case. This is a doctor. The invention he had was to encapsulate viruses. It came, he's an experiencer, his daughter's an experiencer, his wife's an experiencer, and most of this stuff came to him from another place. And he's got it all developed. Mark was helping him, and it hasn't done yet, but this is a whole thing to encapsulate the AIDS virus, cold virus. You can encapsulate the virus, and the virus dies. Communication. I'm just going to quickly flip through this. A lot of people in the UFO community still don't believe there's communication, so I always sort of like to throw this in here. You may not believe me, I'm crazy, whatever, but I mean, can you disregard 7 to 13-year-old kids? And I say, you know, is it really conceivable? You say there's no communication. Is it conceivable that since 1945 or whenever it started, that these things have been flying around in massive numbers and they haven't tried to talk to anybody? I don't think that's conceivable. Dennis Kucinich talked about his encounter. He felt a connection in his heart, heard direction in his mind. This was this experience where he talks about it, and it really isn't that well-known, the experience. This was not a UFO in the sky. This was like yards away. They were there. Shirley MacLaine's bodyguard was there. The bodyguard's girlfriend was there. They took notes. They drew pictures. They all got this message. So this is Dennis Kucinich, whose career ended when Shirley MacLaine outed him. This is this story where I say 7 to 13-year-old kids, Zimbabwe. This is in a schoolyard. 62 kids are in recess. This flying saucer lands. Here's a picture of them all sitting to wait in the little chair and tell their story. They're being interviewed. And all these kids had this experience.
And it's not a gray, it's a little, they call him a little hippie guy who was there outside the schoolyard. He's dressed in sort of like a wetsuit, and he's walking around the bottom of the craft, and all these kids are getting these downloads. And it's all the same type of messages that a lot of the experiencers talk about, this environmental message. You know, that we got too technological, she used the word. We're creating harm to the world. This woman said, I thought the world was going to end. Maybe they were telling us the world was going to end. And they weren't talking. The alien wasn't talking. These kids were just, this stuff was downloading into their heads. And so the question is, do you think that all these kids made this thing up? So I'll just skip this. I mean, these kids all got these downloads, and the one said it was coming through the eyes. The message was sort of coming through their eyes. This kid said, he asked him, how did it get in your head? And he said, I don't know, it just popped into my head. This is the ideas these kids were getting. So there is communication taking place. We are being aided by whatever is there. It's almost like I have the analogy where if somebody's holding our hand, we're walking through the bush, and there's a trail of breadcrumbs. We're following this trail of breadcrumbs. We don't know exactly who's holding our hand, but we are getting some help.
Okay, everybody, I'm going to pause that here. There's something more I want to share before we go for tonight. We got a recent update 2 days ago from Paradigm Research Group and Steve Bassett. He's shared it with us, and I want to reiterate the beginning part because it's crucially important. Now, we've been talking about congressional hearings for a long time now. The citizens' hearing on disclosure are the keys to the kingdom. Having that on film and sending it to Congress and having Congress look at it made it possible for us to schedule the first congressional hearings on the extraterrestrial issue since 1968. There's been a truth embargo in place since 1947. And the congressional hearings are not guaranteed. It's a lot of hard work. And Stephen Bassett's the only one out there who's a lobbyist going to Washington, D.C., having meetings with the senators and the congresspeople. And we need to help him out. So how can we do that? Well, he wants to hire a publicist. There's this lady who worked for him as a publicist during the congressional hearings on disclosure, and she did an excellent job. She has agreed to come back if she can receive a retainer of $10,000. And ultimately, she will need a minimum of $20,000, and her fee could go up to $40,000 depending on how many months she works on the project. So what's the publicist's role? The publicist's role is to get Stephen Bassett on every national talk show from Washington, D.C., and we're talking about Stephen Colbert and John at The Daily Show, and we're talking about David Letterman and all the news programs. I forgot the name of the guy who took over for Larry King. The only way that we can create a media frenzy in mainstream media is by having Stephen appear on these talk shows and be interviewed and explain the congressional hearings to everybody across the nation. This is vitally important to the Congressional Hearings Initiative. He needs $10,000 immediately, and he needs $20,000 very soon after immediately. And let me read to you the words that he wrote about this. I am asking you again today, please, please, I'm asking you to understand that NASARA cannot be enacted without disclosure. It is written into the law because the extraterrestrial presence is part of NASARA. So unless they can land, we can't have NASARA enactment. We'll never have it until we have a formal disclosure from our government. It's all tied into NASARA. I'm going to start doing a series of videotapes that explains all of it that you can share with your friends. I can't emphasize enough how much we need a publicist to come on board now, because these talk shows are already being scheduled out.
And there won't be any spots left to put them on there for. So let me read to you what Stephen wrote on September 22nd, 2014, in his latest update. And to see the entire update, go to paradigmresearchgroup.org. The Congressional Hearings Initiative, CHI, will formally launch on November 5th. The DVDs will be shipped on November 1st. A substantial media blitz will begin on or about October 25th. A tweet email storm will be directed from PRG's Facts on Washington website. Approaches to the appropriate congressional committee members' offices will begin on or around November 10th. The goal is to obtain a commitment to hold congressional hearings by January 31st and actual hearings sometime in February of 2015. Key to the success of the most comprehensive effort ever to get full hearings for the scores of military agency and political witnesses ready to testify will be the amount and depth of the media coverage throughout, particularly mainstream news talk shows. Professional inside Washington press consulting is essential to this outcome, and that is expensive. For those with resources who strongly believe the formal acknowledgement of the ET presence must happen now, this is the time to step forward. The amount needed to maximize this initiative is not great and could mean the difference between success and failure. Want to make history? Contact PRG at paradigmresearchgroup.org. So that's vitally vitally important. So please, if you know anybody who can contribute more than, you know, the $20 or the $100 that you may send tonight, please contact them and explain how important this issue is. Stephen Bassett's on a European tour right now. He's doing 12 lectures and there might be more. So if you're in Europe, go to the update and find this the locations out. He's going to be in England, in France, in Portugal, Spain. He'll be in Norway and the Netherlands and Germany so far. He has gone over there to explain the role of the international exopolitical movement building up to the Congressional Hearings Initiative and the important role that Europe is playing in this. Also, there will be another conference in November, November 14th to 16th, in Laughlin, Nevada, which is pretty close to Las Vegas. And this is being put on by Paola Harris. And Stephen Bassett and Grant Cameron, who you heard both of them tonight, they'll both be there. So look up that information. You may enjoy seeing them there. So that's all that I have that's new tonight. If you have Facebook, you can find me there, facebook.com/ELTruTwin, ELTRUTWIN. I will be posting many new videos coming up over the next month. And also, I am working on a series of articles called The Case for a Formal Disclosure. So look for those also. And I will have new channel pieces coming out from Sananda, and you can find those at Conscious. Oh boy. I guess I'm getting old. Yes, you can find the channel messages at cosmicascension.org, cosmicascension.org. You can find me on Twitter at AA Midway. That's the name of a stargate out in the stars. So thank you everybody for being me for being here with me tonight, and I'm going to play you out now. Have a wonderful week, and stay tuned. There's lots of new things coming.